Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. Today, we're going to be talking about, well, it's autumn now, so we're going to be talking about the bounty of autumn, the harvest, and what we can get from our gardens, how we can grow our own food, all those kinds of wonderful things that happen in the autumn, the abundance of autumn. And my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been on before. Many of you probably have heard her shows, and she's been an organic gardener for 45 years. She's a speaker, author, artist, environmental and agricultural consultant, and an educator. And she's also a certified permaculture designer. And that's permaculture. It comes from the words permanent agriculture. And it's a very advanced design science of putting together edible agriculture, edible environments, farming and gardens and systems. It's all based on natural systems. And she does that very well. She has, we'll ask her. Diane, hi.
Hi.
How big is your garden?
I have 90 beds and an orchard that has, I don't know, maybe 30 trees in it, and around the base of each one of those trees is a growing bed with various layers of bushes and small trees and herbs and roots and vines and all kinds of stuff. So it's all inter-garden, interplanted stuff.
And it's not just rows and beds. It's all very intricate and beautiful and interconnected and interactive. And it's a whole special way of putting plants together and other elements in a space and an environment so that it all works together harmoniously, and that the combination of it all is much greater than the sum of the parts. How's
that?
That's
right. It's called integrative planting. And the whole point of it is that it grows like nature would grow things. You don't see rows in nature.
No, you don't. I was about to say a machine has to make a row. And then I thought, no, what about like gardeners digging with a shovel? But have you ever seen a gardener digging with a shovel or a hoe actually make a totally straight row like a machine would? No. Humans make things like nature because we're natural. Anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, so tell us first, in your own life, why was it important to you to control your own food supply? What motivated you to go get this piece of land and have 90 garden beds?
Well, I had my first garden when I was about 4 years old. My mother was a gardener. She came from a pioneer family, and she passed on to me that whole ethic of being self-reliant and knowing how to produce and store and preserve your own food and everything. So those were skills that came with me from the very beginning. And it was just always how we had things. You know, my mother had a cellar in our first in Indiana, and then in Michigan. And I was just raised that way. But also, when I first saw that seed come up out of the ground that I had put in the ground as a little kid, I was hooked. The magic of it was just so incredible. I have a love affair going with seeds that last my whole life. And just the whole expectation of seeing something grow from, just this little tiny nibble of something up to a flower or a tomato or a cucumber or something, it just enthralled me. But since then, I have made a study of the world, and I'm very good at spotting trends and just seeing how the way of the world is going. And I just want to have my own food under my own control as much as possible. Now, I do go to the grocery store. I mean, I'm used to eating things out of season. When you're totally self-sufficient, you either eat what's growing in your garden or what you personally have preserved. And we've just gotten so used to and spoiled by being able to buy things in a store that, grew 6 months ago that have been kept in cold storage or brought all the way from, Guatemala or someplace, exotic like that. But I don't know, it just tastes so much better when I grow it myself, and I just have this connection with it. You know, I go out in my garden and I sometimes I don't even bother to bring it in the house and cook it. I graze like a
I don't have a garden right now, but when I had my garden in California, I would just go out in the garden. And I remember one night a friend of mine came over, and I had raspberry canes at the time. Everybody where I lived had raspberry canes because one person in our little village had so many raspberry canes that he just gave them away to everybody. And they had these gorgeous, luscious raspberries, more than you could possibly eat. And a friend of mine came over, and we just stood out in the garden, and we just stuffed as many raspberries as we could possibly eat in our mouths.
There is a joy in that, isn't it? It's like when you're a little kid and somebody says, go over into that cherry tree and pick what you want. I mean, how many times have we just eaten until we were almost sick from something so good? But, you know, I have to tell you, that is nature's way. People gorged. Something was available, they would just eat it until there was no more because, you know, it was seasonal a long time ago. Maybe they didn't have a way to preserve it. So it isn't so unnatural for little kids to want to do that, or even us for that matter.
I think that is part of us, and I think that we're unaccustomed to doing that now, that if we were to go back and not go back, but in the present time, do things the way nature does it, we'd be eating like a whole bunch of raspberries, and then we wouldn't eat raspberries for months, and then we'd eat pumpkins or whatever, and that we'd be eating a whole lot of one food or a group of foods, and then we'd move on to a next group of foods and a next group of foods, because that's the way.
Well, there was a reason for that, you know, because especially with fruits, they were cleansing. You know, if you sat there and ate all the cherries or all the raspberries or something that you could possibly eat, you know that for a couple of days there's going to be some activity in your digestive tract.
Absolutely.
and it will draw, you know, vitamin C, that and all the other phytonutrients that go into a plant, they are loaded with things that draw out toxins. So that was we had in our plan, in nature's plan, a way to detox all the time, which we have sort of walked away from because things are different now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what are you eating in your garden right now? What's the harvest?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just pulled up all my Indian corn. Mm-hmm. I still have tomatoes, peppers, hot peppers particularly, but some sweet ones. Lots of herbs that are going into my dehydrator. Also, let's see, I have some greens, some Swiss chard. I'm just kind of mentally walking around my garden. Some green beans, not a lot, though. It hasn't been a great green bean year this year, but, you know, they're out there. And okra, I have been picking some really nice, but not something I want to eat yet, winter squash that is grown for the fact that it stays well, preserves well over the winter, and you could eat it later in the season. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of luck this year with summer squash. The bugs got them. We haven't been getting cold enough weather to really kill off the bug population, so that has been a problem. Mm. But it's a variety. You know, mainly I have been expanding my garden and taking out my grass and my lawns. I have three interns and a helper, and we get out there and we've been pulling and covering our grass because I see no reason to have grass. I mean, really, I don't have goats. I don't need it for pasture. And, you know, my poor husband, who works really long hours, he just really hates to mow. And it's on a hill, so it's hard on his knees. So I vowed that I was going to get rid of all my grass, and I have two parts of my front lawn, and one part is done now, and the next project will be starting to plant trees in the second section. So
that's so lovely.
It's an expansion.
Yeah, it's so much nicer to be able to go outside and have something to eat. And I know that as I've been doing shows, and you and I and other guests, we've been talking about this. I just have this longing to have my garden back. And, of course, I now live in Florida, so I need to learn how to be a Florida gardener instead of a California gardener. But it's coming. It's coming. And now that it's getting cooler, I'm going to start clearing my beds. I have some beds that I haven't been using. I'm going to clear them and start planting. We need to take a break, but we will come back and talk about these things more with Diane Dirks. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. We're talking about fall bounty. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy is the change of seasons, and that in the industrial world and the consumer world, when you go to the supermarket, there isn't so much change of seasons in the food, that the food is always there. But if you were to not live in an industrial culture, if you were to live in a native culture, or even if you were to live on a farm, family farm, 200 years ago or something like that, the whole idea is that people were growing their own food, or even before they were growing their own food, they were hunting and gathering their own food. And at this time of year, the pattern of food wasn't to go to the grocery store. It was to collect everything you can and do whatever you could do with it so that you could get through the winter. And so this really is the season of abundance. And Diane, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's true. In Native cultures, I'm a Living History Society member for my local area, and I've studied this quite a bit. And people would spend a whole warm period growing food so that, you know, even Native cultures or, you know, the white culture in this area, they would spend a whole warm period of the time busily trying to get enough food in so that they could handle the, what they called a starving moon. That would be a Native reference.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a time when the fresh food, which may be still on the vine or whatever, in late fall is gone. And now you have to rely on what you have stored. And, you know, either put it in a cellar, like a root cellar, or you'd maybe can some food or dehydrated it or smoked it or whatever way you could. You had to make that stretch through the whole winter.
And that's right.
Truthfully, it was not an easy time for people because they had to rely on whatever abundance they had at the other times of the season. And if there was no abundance, if they had a crop failure or something, you know, they would have some pretty harsh things they would have to do for the tribe to survive or the group to survive. And it wasn't unusual for Native people to, you know, if they had too many tiny babies or something, they'd take them out in the snow because they couldn't feed them and they didn't want them to suffer. Or the old people would just wander away and sit in the snow till they died, because that would be the only way that they could keep the young, vibrant people and the whole tribe as a whole, you know, going. So we're so spoiled in our culture today, and we have had such abundance and such control over what we eat for so long that we've grown accustomed to it, you know. We think that's right. How it should be. But, you know, if we ever run into a real problem with whatever, climate change or whatever, we might very well have to rethink how we look at food. And I'm looking at it that way now just because it's important that we, because of all the changes in the actual food, in the industrial food complex and how things are grown, that we have some understanding of where our food comes from and what we're doing with it.
Yeah, so, that's really
that's
important. Yeah. I wanted to mention, since we're talking about harvest and about how to carry food into the future, I want to talk about, just for a moment, the importance of seeds and heirloom and heritage varieties. Now, we did a whole show about seed saving, and so you can go back, just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, and you can look up Diane's previous show on seed saving, where we talk a lot about this. But I want to mention about the heirloom and heritage varieties, because since doing that show, I did a show with Pamela Seefeld, who's a pharmacognosist. That's a pharmacist who dispenses medicinal plants. And she was talking about cells, how cells communicate with each other. And in order for the cells to communicate, they have plants and animals and have information in them that needs to go into our cells so that the cells talk to each other. Our cells talk to each other. And she made the point that if you eat a hybrid variety or a GMO variety, it doesn't have the right information. And that we really need to be eating these old varieties, because those are the ones that are giving our bodies the correct information in order to be healthy. Because our bodies are still back in those earlier times. They haven't adjusted to GMOs and hybrids. And we don't want to adjust to that anyway, because those are like altered states. You know, we need to have our natural information that we need to have.
That is so true. There is an arrogance to some of the science that we're experiencing today, that if you can do something, then you should do it, just because it's for profit motivation or some other reason.
Yeah.
But nobody has done any long-term studies on the actual health effects of a genetically altered thing like genetic GMOs. And that's really dangerous, because you think about how long we've had our food system and how long the integration between farmland and the soil and all the other interrelationships that we experience on this planet to stay alive have been going on. It's a very long, old system that's been proven for a long time. And nobody's been doing that. It's just sort of, oh, well, we'll just change this and, you know, it'll look better on the shelves or whatever, right? Whatever motivation there is.
Yeah, but it's not the real food, you know?
No. And I think one of the reasons why people don't feel good, why they don't have any energy, you know, they're drinking more and more things like energy drinks and stuff, is because their bodies are starving for what they really need.
That's exactly right. And even though they're eating food, they're not getting nourished. And even if they're getting nutrition, they're not getting, there's this whole other level that goes beyond nutrition that has to do with like these phyto things and, you know, energetic, and the food is alive. And if we're not getting that other part of it, because we're eating food as it originally appears in nature instead of how it's been altered, we're not getting that information.
That's right. There is a symbiosis going on between the planet and our body.
Right.
And that when that's interfered with, that symbiotic relationship gets altered or cut. So basically, that's what you're saying.
And knowing this makes me want to run right out into my backyard and start planting food so that I have something to eat. And I go to the grocery store and I look and I go, well, wait a minute, this really isn't food. You know, it's something that I won't be malnourished. I mean, I won't be hungry, but it's not nourishing me at that deepest level. We need to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's a certified permaculture designer, and she's been an organic gardener for 45 years. And we're going to be talking about bringing in the bounty when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years, so she knows how to grow a few things. And now is autumn, the time of the harvest and the bountiful return from all the work that has been gone in to the garden during the year. But it's also a time to be thinking about the future and how to get through the long days of winter where there is no food production. And that's a good thing to think about in life, because things have periods of abundance and not so abundant, and being able to get through those times and still survive is a question, a main question of sustainability, and something that our ancestors were faced with every year at this time. So one of the things, though, is that many of the foods that we eat now in modern times come from the need in the fall to be able to preserve food, like jerky, for example, that people would, there wouldn't be enough feed to feed the animals throughout the winter. So the animals would be slaughtered, and one of the things that they would do would be make things like jerky or smoke them into hams. Or Diane, let's talk about what people did in the past and can still do in the future, or in the present, in order to preserve the bounty of autumn. And even if you don't have a garden, there's a lot of food at farmers markets now at this time that you could be doing things with. So what are some things that people can do?
Well, if you know someone who's a farmer or a gardener, or even from your own garden, You're going to have abundances that you, there's just no way you could eat it all. So there are some classes you can sometimes take from an extension office, from your county extension office, or if you belong to a garden club or something. Look around, go online, see if you can find somebody that's teaching how to preserve food. You know, you may find a canning class or someone who's using a dehydrator, which I often do. It's great. You can brine, you know, soak something in, especially meat. You soak it in a salty material, or you can ferment vegetables. That's where sauerkraut and that sort of thing, that was mainly preservation, but it's so good for you. Also, you can freeze. If you have a freezer, you can, you know, maybe parboil. In other words, just quickly boil your vegetables and put them into the freezer, and then they will stay nice and fresh and a good color and taste good. Or if you have a smoker or a smokehouse, or if you know someone with one of those, they look like a big bullet, it's a kind of smoker, they work really great. And then if you have access to or the ability to create a cellar, a root cellar, that will hold a lot of the things which, you know, especially roots. And my mother used to have a root cellar in our house in Michigan, and she would put all her canning stuff in there. You know, she'd have fruit, and she'd make jams. And jams are mostly done in the earlier part of the summer, because that's when they come up.
That's when the fruit's available, yeah.
Right. But later in the year, you are pulling up things like potatoes and beets, and so they can go in a root cellar, or you can can them or pickle them. Pickling, big deal.
Pickled beets. I love pickled beets. You know, one of the things that I did earlier this year when there were some beets I fermented them. I made fermented pickled beets, and instead of vinegar, pickled beets. And that you can do that with cucumbers to make, like I make dill pickles, but I ferment them. And it tastes so much better. And you don't think, and it sounds so illogical that you just put them in water with some salt, and then the microorganisms from the air come in and do the work. But they actually do. And I found that, just as an experiment, I left them some sitting in a jar in the refrigerator, and they lasted for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and didn't mold. And so I can really see, and they were delicious. They were delicious.
Well, this was a tried and true method. And not only do you, when you do a pickling activity like that, not only does it preserve it for a long time and tastes great, but all those wonderful microbes go into your gut and help your gut health and make you stronger, because that's part of your immune system. So this was, every culture on earth used fermenting of one kind or another for food preservation and for taste. Because, you know, you can get awfully bored with the same old food all the time. You know, that's just, you get to a point where you don't even want to look at food if you eat too much of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So pickling is a way to alter and give a little zing. And then, of course, there's spices and things that you can bring in later, which you will be at this point in time, in this part of time of the year, probably preserving your herbs for spice and for medicinal properties and stuff. So this is just one of the most active times of my year. I'm just going crazy trying to get everything done. And so I just basically at the beginning of the year, when I put my crops in for my winter or for my summer crops, I decide what I want to eat.
Yes, that's a good
and
thing
I plant
to do.
That. Even though I'm one of these people that has this total fascination with every kind of unusual and strange vegetable and fruit and stuff, and I have things in my garden that I probably never will eat because I don't know what to do with them, but they look so cool, or somebody gave me a plant or something. And then, you know, everything in my garden, because of permaculture principles, everything in my garden has multiple use. So sometimes all I know of is one use, like, well, maybe it brings in butterflies or something, or maybe it smells good and I could make some kind of a scented thing out of it, or a potpourri or something. But then later I pull the string and I find out by going online and doing some research, my gosh, this is a medicinal herb for the cold. And I had I have a friend with a cold, and here I could just go out and make some tea for him, you know. So and it's just, it helps to really understand what you have growing in your environment, even wildcraft stuff that you're not planting at all.
Yes.
And get familiar with what's around you, because truthfully, and this is something not too many people know actually, things that grow wild that most of us think of as weeds actually are more powerful with nutrients than what we grow.
Absolutely.
It's so much more powerful. The nutrient, the density of nutrients is so much greater in a dandelion than maybe lettuce, for example. And yet you make the same use of it, but what it does for your body is so different. So it also helps to look around and see what's out there.
A weed is only a useful plant whose virtues have not yet been discovered or known. I mean, they might be discovered by somebody else, but you don't know them. So
right.
I would always think twice before tossing out those weeds. Find out what they are.
Right. It's, knowledge is king.
It is.
Truly.
It is. Well, we need to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years, and she has a website. It's the Garden Lady of GA, like Georgia, the Garden Lady of GA.wordpress.com. And she has a lot of this kind of information on her blog. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years, and she's a certified permaculture designer. Her website, again, is thegardenladyofga.wordpress.com. And so, Diane, let's give a practical tip here. We're in our last segment, and let's talk about something that everybody, I think, could do, unless they're a vegetarian, and that is to make jerky. It's something that I grew up with. My father made jerky, and it's so easy to do. You don't even need a dehydrator. The way we used to do it is, and I still do it when I make it, is that you just cut the meat in. We cut it in fairly small strips, not as big as if you buy it in a package. And then you marinate it in something tasty like soy sauce or garlic salt or something like that. Something flavorful. If you like things spicy, put some spicy things on it. And then, so you want to marinate it and get all the flavors in. And then what you do is you just take these little strips and open the oven, take out the rack, and just hang the little strips over the rack, over each little part of the rack. And then put it on the lowest setting and put some foil down underneath so it doesn't drip. You don't have to clean the oven. Put the foil down on the rack below so it'll catch any drips. And just leave it there overnight or into the next day, depending on how long you want to dry it. And you have wonderful jerky that you can carry around with you in your pocket or your purse and have some nice protein to eat when you're out in the world instead of eating junk food.
That is a very good source of protein. And the Native Americans used to make something called pemmican,
yeah,
which, similar to that, it was made with more ingredients, so usually they were drying berries, and they would take acorns and process them and get all the tannic acid out of them, and then they'd have journey food. These are things that, you know, we think of snack food as a potato chip, but really, you want something nutrient-rich, especially if you're,
yes,
if you're hiking or you're up in the mountains or something and you need to keep going and you're maybe cold and hungry. You want something that's really going to pack some punch. Jerky is a great way to do it, and a lot of times, just dehydrated food. You know, you can chew on it for a while, and it gives you nutrition.
Like dried fruit or dried vegetables.
Oh yeah, yummy.
Yeah, dried fruit is wonderful.
It tends to concentrate the flavor too, which is very,
yes,
nice. Also, fruit rolls. You know, you can make, if you have a dehydrator, or you can make it in an oven too. Puree some fruit and lay it in a tray of some kind and just let it dehydrate and then roll it up. I mean, you can buy that stuff, but if you have a fruit tree.
Now, let me tell you something about that fruit roll, because this was just in a newsletter in my inbox this week. And this was somebody who was reporting on how in the supermarket, there was a product, probably more than one of them, where like on the front, I'm doing this from memory, on the front of the label, it said something like strawberry fruit roll. And you turn it over onto the back and look at the ingredients, and there were no strawberries in it at all.
Yeah.
None.
I know we're being lied to. I just hate that.
Yes. And I've made fruit roll. I mean, it's so easy. It is so, so easy. And again, this is something that you could make in your oven if you don't have a dehydrator. Just make it in your oven. Just get a piece of parchment paper. Just puree those fruits, you know, whatever's in season now, peaches or strawberries or whatever, and spread it out pretty thin on the piece of parchment paper, and then just put that piece of parchment paper on the rack and leave it overnight, and it will get all, it'll get dried up like leather, fruit leather. I want to say that one of the things from my background as a child is that at this time of year, at Thanksgiving, we would always go to my grandmother's house. And that side of my family, my mother's side of the family, as I mentioned on another show, is 100% Armenian. And so I grew up in this Armenian family background with all these Armenian foods. And one of the things, I forgot the Armenian name of it, but they would make something like fruit leather out of grape juice, and they would saturate a piece of cloth, and then they would hang up the cloth on the clothesline, and it would dry and it would be fruit leather. But here's the good part. They would also take this was called rojig. I remember that because it was my favorite thing, rojig. What they do is that they take walnut halves, and they string them. They put a needle through it so that it's in a string. And then they take that string of walnut halves and they dip it in the juice. And I think that they mixed it with cornstarch. I'm not sure, but there's a recipe for it. And they dip it in and then they hang it. And then when that dries, they dip it in again. And this whole coat, it's like the walnuts are coated with this dried grape juice. I know it sounds strange, but then you cut it in little circles across ways. And it's so delicious. It has this nice, not too sweet grape candy wrapped around a walnut.
Ooh,
I grew up with that. I just grew up with that. And we only just had it at Thanksgiving. My grandmother would make it by hand at Thanksgiving.
Mm, sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, people are so afraid that somehow they'll get ptomaine poisoning or some horrible thing if they process their own food. But really, it's if you get a book from like Ball, they make canning jars, or you go to your extension office and ask for books on or articles or whatever on food preservation, you can get trained up pretty easily.
I mean,
there are a lot of people out there who want to help you do that. And it's so much fun. I mean, as a kid, that was fun for us. I mean, we'd have canning parties, kind of, you know. My mother would can things. And then, especially if we made something delicious like fruit preserves or something, then afterwards we'd get to open a jar and eat some. And it was more fun than anything, you know, but it was survival. So
right.
We don't have to be afraid of hurting ourselves. We just need to get some education on how to do it right. That's all. Because it's really easy, actually. Canning is pretty darn easy, especially for things that are acid, like tomatoes. Oh, my gosh. All you do is you clean your tomatoes and take the skin off and stick them in a ball jar and add a teaspoon of salt and put a good lid on it and stick it in a boiling pot of water for 10 minutes, you know, and then it stays in your... and label it and stays on your shelf somewhere. I have 3-year-old tomatoes in my pantry, and they're still delicious. And boy, do they make soup taste good. Oh, yeah, you can't buy store bought that tastes that good. It's like a flavor enhancer.
It is. There's nothing like those garden tomatoes. I actually have never canned, but something that I do with tomatoes, especially like at this time of year when there's a lot of them and you can buy them inexpensively at farmers markets, is that you can get a whole lot of tomatoes and make like oven sun-dried tomatoes where you dry them in the oven. And you don't have to dry them all the way. I just dry them till they're just kind of not even leathery. And then you can put them in, but you've removed a lot of the water, and so they're much smaller now and very concentrated for flavor. And you can put things like garlic cloves and herbs and things there too, so that you flavor them. And then you can just take them and put them in a bag or some kind of container and freeze them. And then you can use them to make tomato sauce through the winter. And you've got fresh tomatoes, and they're already seasoned and concentrated. And I use that instead of buying canned tomato sauce. I concentrate the tomatoes. And
the other thing
just
you can
so
do
delicious.
Is take that same thing. You can take that same thing and put oil in it and just keep it in a cool
place. Oh, yeah, and just keep it in a jar. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't even need to refrigerate it.
These are tried and true methods that people have been using for millennia, literally. And that we just don't, we either don't know about them, or we're eating them and we don't understand that these are preserved. These are traditional preservation methods, and we don't know that we can do them ourselves. And so just look up things, like you could just go online and look up preserving foods, and you'll get a lot of ideas of things that you can be doing. Well, Diane, we only have about a minute left. Doesn't it go by fast?
Sure does. We have fun.
Any last words you'd like to say?
Well, I just want to say that I think I told you I'm going to have my own radio show pretty soon. And when I do, I will let you know, and we can maybe launch it with some kind of interracial relationship radio-wise with you, because we are on the same page in so many ways.
We are.
And I think that even though people think it's inconvenient or they don't have the time or whatever, they are overwhelmed by the prospect of preserving their own food or whatever, I have to tell you that you feel so much better when you're eating things that are really nutritious.
Yes.
We are, as a people, I think, we are actually, even though we have lots to choose from and we can go to the store and get anything we look like we want, we are not getting sufficient nutrition. And so when you grow your own stuff, especially using heirloom and heritage seeds and the tried and true types of foods, you start to actually feel differently because your body.
And I'm going to interrupt you right there, because I have to say thank you for being with us. This has been Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.
Okay, love you too, honey. I'll talk.